I don't know if I should plug what it is on the Jolo show. It's not, I wouldn't say it's a rival product, but it's these guys who do a wrestling review show on YouTube and Vimeo that I really, really like.
Well, what is it? Give them a plug, man.
All
That's
right.
cool.
Major plug, shout out to the boys at OSW Review.
OSW.
Yes, Old School Wrestling.
Okay, that's cool.
Old School Wrestling Review. They're these three guys in Ireland who do a video podcast where they critique wrestling pay-per-views, and they specifically did the Hulkamania storyline. So they did all the pay-per-views that forwarded the Hulkamania storyline.
Right.
And then they did the David Arquette trilogy. So right. so they reviewed Ready to Rumble, and then they did the two pay-per-views
that he
was in. They're hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, you got to give them a listen. If you just want to laugh at the old stuff and some really interesting commentary and some really funny some really funny videos. So, OSW. But
okay.
That's my shirt.
Poopy days are here again.
Pies.
Mm. Happy days are here again, Margo.
So thank you, JVM. Oh, and thanks to Joe LoCastro and Vince Russo for their intro.
Yeah, it was great.
Awesome. Do you think Vince is going to watch the show?
Well, if he blocks me, that means he's watched our show.
Mm.
Yes, we're back on track after our sneaky Brucey bonus WWE Flintstones episode. There's no easy way out. There's no shortcut home.
There's no shortcut home.
Fantastic. How about that? We get an opening montage of the top two matches, Rock and Angle exchanging catchphrases, and Austin and Triple H, no touching. No touching. Going into their three stages of hell matchup tonight. Ooh, so let's get the final pay-per-view before X7 underway.
And now, Wiener Sports Nutrition presents No Way Out.
With a poster of Kurt Angle tap dancing on a computer board, it must be No Way Out 2001. February 25th, 2001, from the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, in front of a sellout 15,223 fans, 2,000 comps, paying an average of $52.13 per ticket, each spending $9.87 at the concession stand, with 590,000 TVs tuned in at home. An incredible buy rate for a traditionally meh month and before international boys pick up the slack.
Spoiler alert, the Fed was fucking hot at this time.
Theme song tonight is a shameless but decent rip-off of Bush's Machine Head.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I'm blown away.
Did they get royalties for this?
No.
They butchered it.
It might be legally different.
Which is the best kind of different.
Yeah.
Just make it shit, and there you go.
Hit me, 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 hit me. It was so bad.
First up, we got the Hardcore Championship. It's the champion, Raven, versus the Big Show. Steve, do you remember Raven's theme?
Go, 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 go.
Beep, 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 beep. It's just Benoit again, then.
Do you remember Stevie Mac's version of Ravenstone? Because I remember this was, it was a house party we were at, and I took over the stereo and started, I got out my wrestling mixtape and put it in.
It's very good.
Good for like five people there.
Oh, good for me.
Yeah. Anyway, Stevie Mac had his own version of the Raven song, which is "Suck My Cock, Cock, Cock."
And he goes, "Mim, mim, mim, mim."
It's an awesome song. I love Raven song. Yeah, yeah. I think it's very cool.
Didn't like his get up though. He looked so clean, so. Yeah, his t-shirt was sparkling white. Bang a parasol off that.
Did he ever wear the leather jacket in WWF?
Yeah, he did.
Did he?
Initially, yeah.
Because that was cool.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, and then he started coming out in white t-shirts and jorts. I know he always had
leather pants. Like.
Yeah.
Trips is like, can you get some denim over that? It's a good look.
Maybe he could wear like never nude jean shorts over his pleather pants.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Can you imagine that shit?
Kill him in one night. Ravens from the Bowery. Bowery Lane is where a number of gangs were born. I thought a Bowery was like a raven sanctuary or something.
I thought it was like up in a church somewhere, no? It's like,
I don't know, it's where Penguin's from in Arkham City anyway.
Hmm. Yeah. And he's facing New Year's baby Big Show, who's ditched his Billy Gunn belly top and girdle for his dual-strapped onesie. I thought he was in better shape this month.
He looks pretty decent, actually. Hair plus beard, his best look.
Yeah. Can tell you his worst look. The fucking handlebar mustache.
Mm.
Or maybe taking on like Brock Lesnar, kind of end of 2002-ish. Where he's got the onesie, but he's got pants over the onesie with Heyman.
Oh, yeah, that was a bit of that. Oh, God,
yeah.
Getting his fashion tips from Shawn Michaels, like current Shawn Michaels. Straight up, sexy ninja distraction to no avail. Then Raven tries a bucking bronco to no avail.
Raven tried to jump on Show's back. He botched it completely. And then I think Show was pissed off and he fucked him down on his hip. And I was like, oh, man.
Straight into hardcore plunder, baby. So this is during the 24/7 gimmick where you have to defend your hardcore title anytime, anywhere, against anyone. The bouts would end when the hardcore champion ran away. So it was a pylon mess from the hardcore division in every match and multiple segments backstage. I thought it was fun at first, but it got tiresome pretty fast. So the hardcore lads pile in. Crash joins the fray in a hilarious mustachioed concession stand worker disguise that gives him no advantage as he Pearl Harbored Raven from the back. Then Steve Blackman! Oh, I'm so happy to see him. Then your boy, Hardcore Holly.
He'd be a kind of a sub-boy. Like, he's still a boy, but he's not upper echelon boy.
Maybe he's lost his boy status because he changed his gimmick.
His boyish charm, if you will.
Then Steve Blackman, Hardcore Holly, and Billy Gunn. After Big Show's final cut, Gunn sneaks a pinfall on Raven and gets the hardcore title. And they fucking play his song as well, although the match is going to be another 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But takes a tandem side slam from Blackman and top rope leg drop from Holly, enabling Raven to regain his belt. Sexy Ninja Tori, who I thought looked incredible in her skin-tight black outfit, is thwarted by Molly Holly. Big Show disperses the competition and chokeslams Raven for the win. Big Show's the new hardcore champion in 4 minutes 20. Post-match, he bats away Rockabilly, saying, "You dropped the IC belt, you're not going to get this belt either."
Good man.
Was there some kind of botch here, like Billy clatters Big Show at the end of the match? And it looked pretty nasty, and then Billy falls out of the ring, and after the match, Big Show grabs him, rams him into the ring post. He looked a bit pissed off.
A bit after it.
Yeah, a little bit. It looked
a bit of handbags.
Yeah.
Do you reckon that maybe they were thinking, like, God, WrestleMania X7, Big Show, the one. Let's fucking book it, Dano.
It's only the main event that Rock Austin could have been.
The one versus the onesie. So what do you think of this match?
Shite. A bit of a mess. Didn't like the hardcore title. Don't like hardcore matches. Didn't like the majority people in this match.
Aww.
That was like pretty bad, actually.
I actually quite liked the 24/7 rule, and I never don't remember ever getting bored of it. Although having it in the ring kind of defeats the purpose. I would have preferred if they'd gone backstage. No, I liked a lot of the wrestlers in here. It's fun to see them. The match itself wasn't very good, but it served the purpose as an opener.
Yeah.
Hardcore matches, especially 24/7, is quite a turn-your-brain-off, relaxing trash brawl. So I thought this would be better suited a few matches into the card as opposed to at the very start. I did give out about hardcore matches in the Slamboree episode, where it was Terry Funk and Norman Smiley, but in this limited capacity, I actually quite enjoyed this. Like, it's something I'd grow tiresome quickly, but just in this segment, I did enjoy it.
If I had my way, I would have swapped this with the tag title match and had the tag title match open up the show. But of course, Taker's not opening up the show, of course. Because he'd been talking.
Earlier today, Kevin Kelly, the bastard, does not wish Kurt Angle luck in his title match, like Angle expected, but rather asks how he's feeling. He says he's just fine and calls the Las Vegas natives losers like the Brahma Bull. Backstage to Lillian, Benoit says himself and Eddie will work together and one of them will be the Intercontinental Champion.
I disagree. That's a stupid storyline going into a multi-man match.
Why?
Because they're obviously going to fucking... Someone's going to make a pin or a cover and they're going to push each other and break up about 5 minutes into the match.
No, but I think you meant that they'll incapacitate Jericho and X-Pac and go at it. He didn't say that. Read between the lines.
Next up, it's the Intercontinental title match. It's a fatal four-way. The champion, Chris Jericho, versus X-Pac, versus Eddie Guerrero, versus Chris Benoit. Saw this, was like, oh, fuck yeah, thank you, 2001.
Yep.
Apart from X-Pac.
Yeah.
He's a good enough wrestler. He's not a bad in-ring guy. It's just, you know, the second you put a mic in him or look at his character and how it hasn't changed gimmick.
Yeah, he can work. But he's just so annoying.
And stale.
He's still, on his Titantron, it's still footage of him in DX. It's
from like, 98.
When fucking Triple H wants nothing to do with him at this point.
Yeah.
And then he's fucking coming down to the ring still doing crotch chops. That's enough.
Jesus. X-Pac is back after 3 months out rehabbing his neck after Jericho delivered a powerbomb a few months ago in a cage match. No Mercy 2000s. Should have asked China for neck rehabbing tips. Yeah, I wrote here, he still got his fucking DX song. Oh, X Factor had already formed 2 weeks ago when Just Incredible got a job in the WWF.
They didn't have the theme sorted out at this stage, unfortunately.
So you have to wait till Albert gets there and then you can ring up Uncle Cracker.
Are they at Mania? I don't remember them being at Mania.
No, I don't think so. Steve! What bar is Chris Jericho? Now, Chris Jericho is sporting red tights with silver and black barbs and black kick pads. What do you got?
Jay, I have gone old school with the bar I'm currently eating. A Kit Kat.
Fantastic, yes.
Have you not done Kit Kat?
I don't care, I'm the bar master.
But let us take it to the fans.
Let's do this shit.
Number one, it is a can of Cock and Bull ginger beer.
I thought that said cock burn there for a second. It's gonna go, what?
Power yogurt.
Nice. Oh, he is.
Eddie Van Halen's guitar and album, Best of Both Worlds.
Honestly, I think that's what it actually is. Because Jericho's a big 80s rock guy. Like myself.
He is a box of Barry's tea.
Nice.
High caffeine energy supplement, a spicy hot can of cocaine.
Yeah, baby!
And lastly, he is a limited edition OS fucking W t-shirt.
Yeah!
A can of Coke to Joshua Hobbs for that one.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like, way to get on the show with
that. Yeah. Play to the ego.
For this match, I was watching the WWE Network version, you guys, DVD?
DVD.
I was watching the live version.
For me, the WWE Network audio got all screwy. It's like that kind of watery, something's been changed sound on it.
Right, okay.
But I didn't notice any pauses or, you know, in the commentary. Because WWF Pulse Benoit were like, oh, we're going to take out select audio clips of them praising Benoit and that kind of stuff. But I didn't notice anything.
I didn't notice anything.
Lawler says, Jericho is like the XFL. He hate me. Instead of a ref shirt, Jericho shamelessly wore an XFL Rod Smart He Hate Me jersey.
What's He Hate Me?
That's what he had on the back of his jersey.
That's his catchphrase.
That's like my question.
I fucking hate X-Pac and that quasi-martial arts wavy arm shit that he does.
There was an amazing point. It was in like the first minute of the match where he does a few chops and the camera zooms in and he's doing his thing and you can actually hear him go, "Whoa!" I fucking died.
Yeah, but all he does seems to do is the spinning heel kick.
Yeah.
It's rather like, poorly.
Yeah.
Has Steve Blackman ever come in and hit people with his batons and go, "Whoa!" No, he fucking didn't. It's not Hollywood.
Benoit and Eddie double team X-Pac and Jericho, Eddie breaking up two of Benoit's attempts to win, until, as you said, what happens to every team that goes after a singles belt? They turn on each other and start brawling 5 minutes in. Eddie reverses a pressing powerbomb into a smooth Hurricane Rana pin position, then a face wash pirouette, then takes a superplex. I was like, oh god, Eddie and Benoit together.
They're great.
This is their limited in-ring action in this match was better than their match at the ECW, what was it, One Night Stand 2005. This is phenomenal what they're doing here.
Much, much better, yeah.
In an idiot kayfabe spot, as Jericho and X-Pac pin Benoit and Eddie, the ref counts both pins simultaneously, even though the commentators rightly point out that the ref would be fucked if both counted to three.
Well, what do you do in that situation?
You don't count either. Or okay. You make the judgment call of which one did it first.
So, yeah, you should just go, no. Or book it to be an elimination match. And in that case, you could count two, and then you're down to fucking Eddie versus Benoit, which is what we wanted anyway. Because it would have been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Jericho and Benoit have a crisp, fast-paced exchange, finishing with YTJ applying the Lion Tamer to Benoit, then to Eddie, then to X-Pac. Then X-Pac's mate, Knob End Just Incredible, runs in and is swatted away as Jericho takes a full Nelson suplex. The X-Factor fuckwits wait for the next spot in front of the goddamn hard camera. Like, with their backs facing the camera. I was like,
wow.
Oh my god. But thankfully, it's only for a second as we get an L1 parade of finishers. Immediate double super kick, fuck off, line salt, X-Factor, X-Pac smartly low blow Jericho, exposing this match type's gigantic flaw. There's no DQ in a fatal four-way.
Yeah, and there's no count out either, right?
Unless it was elimination, as you said. So I was thinking with this, it actually happens later. If there's no DQ, could you not just get in there and keep stomping someone in the balls? Just quit. Quit.
Yeah.
You'd tap. You wouldn't.
Yes.
Quickly.
Yeah.
What a horrible,
what a terrible match. Yeah. Let's see what Vince Russo has to say about this.
Yeah.
Then a crippler crossface, beautifully broken up with a neckbreaker from Eddie.
Mm.
He's so graceful in the ring. And then a Benoit headbutt. In the end, Jericho sneaks a win by a victory roll and bridging X-Pac to retain his title in 12-17 in a fast-paced, enjoyable matchup with three stellar talents. It's just a shame that X-Pac and Ratface Naka were in the match. Far out of their league, rubbing shoulders with the other three future world champions. But X-Pac, he's not a bad wrestler. It's just his character.
Yeah, like, I don't think he brought this match down. You know, like, I think he kind of held his own. But I do think it would have been a better match if he wasn't in it and it was triple threat. Oh my god, it would be so good. I'm, like, marking out to the thought of that match.
But personally, I thought any time he was in the ring, I was like, oh, you're going to slow it down. You're going to flail your limbs. You know.
Fuck off.
Don't want to see you in there at all. Like, and Jericho, I think Jericho's excellent. He can't keep up with Benoit and Eddie. They're just a level above.
I would agree with that, yeah. However, as an all-round talent, I think Jericho might be better than both of these guys at this point.
In retrospect.
Eddie would go on to be unbelievable, one of the best. But I do think at this point, Jericho was a better overall guy.
Just with his charisma and promos and
promos
stuff.
And
character
and working the crowd and just being over in general.
We get an ad to demand Raw on TNN because they had moved from the USA Network and were in slightly less homes. Then an ad for WWF The Music Volume 5 pushing The Rock's Pie. I love The Rock. This is a terrible song.
What is this song?
He did a song with Slick Rick, and it's like innuendos, but just references to pie. Oh, I love the taste of pie. Ooh, don't give me your nasty grandma's pie. Or,
oh, shut up.
No. Or I'll forcible entry your pie.
Backstage, H's hand gets taped up, and McMahon barks and taps his nose at Commissioner Regal for knowing what to do when the time comes in the upcoming matchup. Fighting for female dominance, it's Stephanie McMahon versus Trish Stratus. Promo package. Steph says bitch 3 times. A young Roman Reigns takes notes.
Bitch, bitch, bitch.
I reckon men wrote these.
Men who hate women.
In the build-up to this, we get a look at Zombie Linda. One of the greatest gimmicks ever. Playing to her strengths. Yeah, I loved that gimmick. I thought Vince at this time, when he's literally just booking himself to pair over every diva who comes in, Tori, Stacy, Trish, brilliant. Genius.
At WWF New York, it's Busta Rhymes and my boy Test. No payday, mate. Not even in the state.
But you get paid for that, right?
Yeah.
He got his dinner for free anyway. You get to watch a bit of XFL on the big fucking tennies as well.
Face Test says we'll find out who the biggest trash bag hoe of the WWF is.
Which isn't that like a Jericho line?
Yeah. It's the best he could come up with.
Shame.
My boy.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Then 2 walking backstage vignettes with Stephanie McMahon and Trish Stratus. Holy shit, it's like X7. They are pushing this really hard as like a main event. Like, Trish enters with sweaty hair and oily boobs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
She looked awesome.
Very smart to add a mink coat to her attire on the way to the ring. A present from Vince. That was a great storyline addition.
Yeah.
Steph comes out in a tee and sweatpants to H's hand-me-down theme song, My Time. It was fun. She didn't mind using the same song as China, whom Triple H ploughed for years beforehand. Would you want the ex-girlfriend's theme song? Like?
Don't treat me like a Steph. It'd be amazing if she came out to that.
This was about a year into Trish's WWF career, so she was still pretty much a valet. Not close to the women's wrestler she'd be kind of in a couple of years' time. So, as WWE market them, it's a big, fake-breasted, gold-digging skank versus a spoiled, rich, trash-bag hoe. And fucking straight into the women catfight spots. Hair pull, and Trish sells for an untrained businesswoman.
Okay. No, actually, one.
Oh, yeah, was all right.
Wasn't bad.
We'll see if someone gets eliminated later.
Oh, bollocks.
Like, I love seeing beautiful women. I won't deny that. Just watching this, I had an instant negative reaction to this match. Like, I've actually never watched it before. I skipped this when it was on. I've never watched Vince versus Steph at No Mercy 2003.
That's
either.
A fucking snuff movie, that is. He batters her. It's disgusting.
Fair juiced them. They put on a very successful, highly choreographed match. Like, designed to hide their tremendous shortcomings. But this isn't a wrestling match. This is a storyline angle wrestling match.
Yeah. I'd put it up, you know, like on the same kind of level as Big Show and Mayweather at like WrestleMania 24. You know, it's like a guy who's not a wrestler, doesn't know how to bump, doesn't know how to put a match. But if he's told what to do move by move, it's actually possible to have an okay match, you know?
I was using that very example when I was watching this match, actually.
Excellent.
Because we had argued about the WrestleMania 24 match before. And I've come around to your way of thinking. I thought what they did here was really fucking well done. And the stuff at Regal was very good.
Yeah, I thought it was good booking, you know, how like Vince is like, you're gonna do what's right. And he's like, one's your daughter and one's your mistress. Oh my fucking Christ. He's like, yeah, of course I'll do what's right. Great.
Yeah.
Surely he should help out the daughter because, sure, he's gotten loads of mistresses, you know? And sure, he's buying her love anyway.
But he, know? That's what he ended up doing.
Yeah.
And it backfired anyway.
It was always going to backfire.
Yeah, yeah.
Both are wrong.
It was,
you know?
Lose-lose, like.
Then we get slaps, then kicks, then Trish gets hungry bum. Exposing.
Yeah, she does.
Exposing.
Starving.
Exposing a shapely cheek.
Massive, massive pop.
She fixes it after a bulldog and gets heat from the crowd.
Stephanie not staying down for that bulldog that drove Stephanie's face into the pin. Get it right there.
Steph is the default face in this matchup, despite abusing her position as the wife of the top heel in the company. Hair pull, super snapmare, a dip outside twice. Slam hair against commentary booth. Douse breasts in ice cold water. Strip and spank by Steph, and that gets a huge pop.
I expected this to be fucking shit, and I was watching it going, holy shit, holy shit.
And they really worked their bollocks off. They gave it their all for 7 minutes, 8 minutes.
Like, this is the best they can do.
Yeah.
Double hair pull KO, and Regal runs in, so we're actually 3 for 3 with run-ins. He at first helps Trish by KOing the ref, Jimmy Corderas, then KOs her with a neckbreaker, and Steffi gets the win in 8:29. And I thought they did a great job hiding their shortcomings. It was a success despite my hang-ups, but I personally have no interest in skanks brawling.
I thought that the first couple of minutes were a bit ropey, but by the end, I really enjoyed it. Trish was excellent. Stephanie held her own. Yeah, fine.
I'm not complaining, but why would Steph try and rip off Trish's clothes? Is to expose her as a skank? And
As a slut, yeah. Okay.
To shame her.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. For titillation. Backstage with William Regal, and irate Vince books himself and Trish versus Regal and Steph. We mentioned that it was quite funny that Regal was screwed either way, whatever he did. Bye, 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 Frosted Tips Michael Cole.
Ugh.
Stone Cold, Stone Cold, are you ready to enter hell next?
That may honestly be the stupidest question I've ever heard in any interview in the history of the world. And I think Austin felt the same way. He gave him a dirty look and said nothing and fucked off.
Like, you mean because it's like, yeah, of course I am, is the answer.
No, it's a match type, three stages of hell.
He's not going to hell.
But he's asking if he's literally going to hell.
But he didn't say literally.
Well, are you ready to enter hell? Fucking face on you.
Imagine if that's what Austin did. It'd be the best promo ever. He just pisses in his face. Piss in my face.
What was Austin's response?
Nothing.
He just stank-eyed him and left.
Yeah.
Yes, so much like modern WrestleManias, we get a huge drawing matchup halfway through the show, the real main event, with a couple matches as buffer before the main event title match. It's the three stages of hell, Steve Austin versus Triple H.
State of your CG cage fed. It's just awful.
Austin was written off TV at Survivor Series 99 with a big whodunit drive-by angle. It was revealed to be the Big Quiche.
I'm a bad, bad man.
He's from Southern. Texas.
He is from Texas.
It was revealed to be Rikishi, but his heel main event push died a swift and immediate death. So they parlayed the angle into Triple H being the mastermind behind it. Austin returned at No Mercy 2000 to get his revenge. He dropped Triple H from a car from a forklift.
How did he not die?
Maybe he is just that damn good.
You'd expect him to come out of the car with, you know, the accordion for a neck. You know?
And the two cost each other the world title against Angle in the prior weeks. After a no touching until no way out stip was added, they each beat up the person closest to the other in poor form. Wife beater Austin stunned Stephanie. And then Triple H pedigreed JR.
Yeah, not quite the same really, is it?
No.
Stephanie can take a stunner.
Yeah.
Much better than a lot of wrestlers.
Vince. He's like one of the worst sellers in the stunner.
It's like the water bottle bump. It's like...
Awesome.
Ooh, they finally get to touch each other tonight in Three Stages of Hell. A gimmick 2 out of 3 falls match. First fall, a normal match. Second fall, street fight. And a third fall, if necessary, a steel cage match. Oddly, the WWE Network version has Austin's Disturbed theme on this pay-per-view.
DVD did as well.
So did the live version.
Oh, fantastic.
The one thing that annoyed me is Austin comes out way too quick. Let the lyrics kick in and then come out, because you get to hear fuck all of the song, because he walks to the ring pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Actually, Disturbed wanted to have a much more interesting song, like a full, you know, kind of 4-minute song, mm-hmm. as opposed to just get to the chorus. But there's like Jim Johnson wants that, so they're like, mm-hmm. oh, fuck it. Okay.
I don't get that. Like, why can't they write a song and then if Jim Johnson wants to whip it around and do his shit with it, then he's more than welcome to. But, you know, let them do a fucking song and whack it on their album. Like,
absolutely.
You know?
Mm-hmm. First of all, straight wrestling match. Austin starts off hot. They brawl to the outside under 2 minutes into this match.
Into the wrestling match?
Yeah. Austin works the left arm. I never thought I'd. He busts out an arm breaker in 2001. It's pretty incredible.
Nice.
As it had hindered Triple H's ability to apply a pedigree, which is effective and showcased expertly throughout the match.
Because he's fucking great. He sold it like a boss for 40 minutes straight. God damn it. In 2001, Triple H was the best in the world.
And Triple H turns the tide, countering a top rope axe handle. H works Austin's left knee with chop blocks, using the ring post and the figure four. He adds more leverage by holding the ropes, and the ref is flummoxed. How is Austin in more pain? What?
What just happened?
Back and forth brawl. The two work fast enough, despite selling like they're spent. It actually felt like the closing sequences of a match already, even though this is the wrestling fall.
Yeah.
You know?
One of the problems I had with the build of this match is that I felt that they kind of made it a bit obvious because they drilled it into your head. Triple H is the advantage in the first round wrestling. He's definitely going to win the wrestling round. And then Steve Stone Cold is definitely going to win the brawling round. I'm like, oh my god, you can fucking bang a flip off this. Like, they made it so obvious.
Austin counters a top rope nothing with a kick. Stunner, and Austin gets the pin and goes ahead 1-0. Lawler and JR put over that the first fall favoured Triple H, as it's a straight wrestling match, and this loss will be a spirit breaker. The second fall, it's a street fight which Austin will definitely win. Brawl on the outside. Austin, it's like, what? The first one was a brawl on the outside. But it's definitely more of a street fight. Brawl on the outside. Austin suplexes H on the ramp and smashes him with a TV monitor before brawling amongst the crowd under a, hey, okay, bro, sign.
Man, Triple H gets up and you can see his arm and it's like, holy shit, he's beginning to bruise like immediately after taking that bump. And then Austin goes and does it again straight away. Oh, Triple H, man. Bumping like a boss to make Austin look like the best.
Austin wails on H in a Ronnie Garvin style battering, hitting his back with the chair, then the right knee, then the left knee, and then the chest.
12 chair shots.
Wow. Vicious chair shots. This is, like, I was impressed actually here.
Right, 12, then a break. He works the crowd, he goes back, and he gets the chair to do one last shot. So 13 chair shots.
The same amount of times Triple H is world champion.
Conspiracy. All oh, you fucking sheeple, you don't believe it. It's there, people. 13 chair shots, gets a 2.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Fucking ridiculous.
It's not like like 13 chair shots would win the main event of WrestleMania.
Oh, no, never, never.
Austin breaks out a barbed wire 2x4, which gets Foley chants. but H strikes Austin with it, not before Stone Cold puts his hand way up. Holy, I'm not even close to that.
This is like, Taker. Just get your hands up. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm
better off being safe. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Stone Cold takes refuge behind Jerry Lawler to Blade. It was like, to see Lawler actually just kind of crowds around him. Are you all right, Blade? In there? Yeah, yeah, all right. Yeah. And then moves. Countering a pedigree, Austin back body drops H outside of the ring. And then later counters a pedigree attempt and back body drops Triple H through the Spanish announce table. Hunter takes back control with the timekeeper's bell and a neck breaker, but Austin dumps him to the outside and smashes his face with a steel chair. And then he kind of hilariously manages not to slip, so he's just like spreading afterwards. That was hilarious. And then the steel steps into Triple H's blocking forearm. He just goes, and that's his chance to Blade. The announcers hilariously squabble and point fingers when H finds a sledgehammer under their booth.
Oh, hilarious. JR is like, I did not put this here. Not me.
With the blood and these toys, it's likely why this pay-per-view was rated 18s.
Oh, really?
Mm. It's weird, you know. Muzzled sledgehammer shot, pedigree, and H gets the pin, tying the match at one apiece.
But how did he beat him in the no DQ?
Yeah, what's that? But like, even though Triple H has a history, well, from Royal Rumble 2000, he's clearly good at street fights.
Yeah.
When's Austin had been successful at street fights? I don't really, was he maybe one against Taker?
Yeah, not. I never really thought him as a hardcore guy. He's, you know, punchy kicky.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But so weird seeing blood, seeing two guys get blood in one match. Holy shit. It was crazy. You know, I don't want to see it in wrestling much, but man, it'd be great to have one match every year that was a bloodbath, you know? Yeah. It makes it so special, you know?
I thought Austin's Blade job was okay. Triple H's was very good.
Mm.
Austin's, you know, last Royal Rumble was nuts.
Mm.
This one, much safer.
Yeah.
I love how they actually incorporated Triple H through his wars with Mick Foley is now more vicious and more of a street fighting character, not just straight wrestling. And they give him, here's the barbed wire bat as well to use. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And the crowd mark out, because, you know, you never see the barbed wire bat, and he broke it out. Third fall, steel cage match. The roadies rush to the ring to secure the lowering cage. Oh, great job. WWF didn't show the cage in the arena at all prior to being lowered. Kind of kayfabe-y, we might not need it. H applies the barbed 2x4 to Austin's face against the hard camera. Rookie move, and Austin does the same. H tries to escape the cage, begging the question why a blood feud should end with who can run away first. Like, that's why you have the Hell in a Cell, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be like, there's literally no way out, as opposed to, you know, cage match, there's two ways out. X7 booking, counter to stunner, pedigree. Austin kicks out, crowd flip out at the near fall. Then the counter to the pedigree, stunner. H sells like he is close to death, like he like was just like a slumping over. I thought it was a very fitting sell because he's bollocks, like. And well, they're both knackered. Austin gassed in this, and I was like, Austin's only back a few months. He's still fucked. Like,
so this must have only been like his second or third match back since coming back from his year off, right?
Yeah, it was the Bad Man and then Triple H.
Yeah,
late 2000s.
Holy shit!
I did it for The Rock.
What? And his couple of minutes in the Rumble, like, you know. Yeah, because the entire build of this was, oh, we can't touch, so we can't actually wrestle. Like,
Fine, 40 minutes.
In all fairness, fair fucks to him for having this match with not being match fit. That's pretty fucking impressive. Like,
yeah, it didn't show. And Triple H kicks out of the pinfall. Grabs the sledgehammer. While Austin grabs the barbed 2x4, they simultaneously deck each other, and H is able to delay and direct his falling onto Austin and gets the pin and wins the match in 39-26.
And doesn't go on to Mania.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, I fucking hated the finish.
Really?
Like, it's supposed to make everyone look good. It's essentially a draw, but you didn't want to have a draw because you couldn't have a draw because the feud was over. Therefore, Triple H gets a fluky win, so Austin still looks strong. It didn't wash with me.
I totally get what you're saying, but I thought this was great. I thought it put over both men. Triple H is definitely now on Austin's level. Unfortunately, you know, the booking going forward kind of doesn't do it justice. But for this match, I thought this ending was excellent. Because no one actually lost, you know. I know Austin technically lost, but he really didn't.
Yeah, a huge shocker considering Austin won the Rumble and is main eventing WrestleMania in his home state. They lay slumped on each other until some accurate cunt throws a beer and hits Austin in the face.
Jesus like Christ.
Terry Funk throwing it. Like.
Imagine if Austin just catches it. It would have been fucking great. Man, these guys wrestled for 40 minutes and some cunt throws a can at them. Dickhead. There's nothing really else to say.
Cunt Austin gets his heat back with a stunner and his theme plays, diminishing the huge win H just got.
Cunty Stone Cold ruins ending and has to put himself over. But win the match? If these guys had the exact same match, I mean, move for move, except Austin falls on top of Hunter, fine. It still raises Triple H for future feuds. Or the worst storyline ever to come. yeah, silly.
Yeah, despite my reservations, like as I said, Austin is a punch kick wrestler in the Attitude Era. Himself and H had a blinder. This is one of Austin's best pay-per-view performances. Love the use of the barbed 2x4, putting over the gravity of wrestler H losing the wrestling fall. Great commentary. JR kind of stepped it up in the second fall and the third fall to match the drama of the match itself. One huge problem I had is like, hey, do a clothesline. Yeah, clothesline, yeah? Yeah, all right. Oh, fucking hell, lads. They were shouting spots at each other. Clothesline! Austin said he is partially deaf in one ear.
That's here, right.
So, but the crowd were very loud, so you can't really notice it. It's yes, not, you know,
they,
it's not that
they
bad.
Were into this, as was I. It was great.
Excellent matchup. Second best street fight match I've ever seen. Yeah. Behind Foley, Triple H 2000. Yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah.
You might ask, why did Triple H win this match? This is going into spoilery territory, so I'm pre-warning you.
Unnecessary.
And now I'm warning you.
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay, five reasons. One, it's Triple H. Which is a huge shame because this is pre-quad tear, pre-cunt Triple H, and he's.
That's not far, far out from quad tear, cunt Triple H.
Reason two, he jobbed to Angle at the Rumble and would job to Taker at Mania, so let's not do three pay-per-view jobs in a row.
Then don't book the match.
Reason three, Austin's heel turn was already decided, so a loss wouldn't hurt him, even though they're still selling WrestleMania as him as the top face in Texas. Which is actually true. It didn't hurt Austin or buy rate one bit.
No, definitely not.
Number four, WWF initially wanted face Triple H versus heel champion Austin post-Mania, so this had set it up.
I don't get face Triple H coming off this.
Jesus, no. Like, how are they going to turn him so quickly? It took him leaving for months to turn him.
Yeah.
Better get on the ringer to Bono then.
God.
And finally, reason five, it's Triple H.
Wasn't that number one?
Yes.
Yes.
But it was so big it was worth mentioning twice. Alright, so that's halfway through the show and it's time for the
Oddbird Questionarium.
It's time for the Ad Break Questionarium with your pal Allison Pegler, a.k.a. Obscurus Lupa. This week's brain-scratching scorcher, which iconic wrestling superstar and Hall of Famer features in the 1993 masterpiece Thunder in Paradise? Answer after the break.
The Weekend Warrior. These men don't play for money. They don't play for glory. They play for the love of the game.
No, we don't. We do it for them.
Well then, if you're trying to impress an XFL cheerleader, I suggest you huddle up with Stacker 2. Stacker 2 is the safe, smart way to burn fat and get an extra boost of energy. Stacker 2, the most valuable fat burner.
Did you figure it out? Which iconic wrestling superstar and Hall of Famer features in the 1993 masterpiece, Thunder in Paradise? Is it Hulk Hogan? Yes! No! The correct answer is the Zodiac.
Yes! No! No! Just yes! No!
Brutus Beefcake, Ed Leslie, the Golden Nogger Lifetime Achievement Award winner. You can see more of the OSW Hall of Famer in our Whopper Thunder in Paradise reviews. There's a link below the video. Thanks for playing, and see you next time.
Some have called it an unprecedented television event. Others have called it a desperate ploy to increase sagging ratings.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the XFL!
Oh, yes! It's time to talk about the XFL. Vince stated that if the NFL was the No Fun League, the XFL will stand for the Extra Fun League. The XFL, a 50-50 joint venture by NBC and WWF. The idea came about when Vince wanted to buy the CFL and NBC and Time Warner wanted to start their own football league. He was flush with cash during the boom of the Attitude Era, so instead of huge payoffs to shareholders and employees, why not invest it in a restaurant in Times Square and a new football league? The idea was to abolish some of NFL's rules, jazz it up with WWF-style presentation, and do what Vince did to pro wrestling in the 80s. Instead, he did what he did to bodybuilding with the WWF in the 90s.
Gary Strider! Wow!
And this business venture ended up costing WWF and NBC almost $138 million.
Well, fairness, it's not that much.
It's not that much.
I would have thought it would have been...
a billion or something.
Yeah, like... yeah. That honestly, it doesn't sound that small. It's crazy.
So it costs WWF $69 million, which is double what is commonly reported. Getting on the stock market, they have to release the actual figures. So.
Yeah.
Despite initial resistance from businessmen and players, like one of them was asking, will I get drop-kicked on the field? Shunning the idea automatically, with 8 teams playing 10 games each on 3 different channels, NBC, UPN and TNN, they'd air one game each week. Here we go.
Here we go.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking.
The Rock says, finally, professional football has come back to Los Angeles. If you smell what the XFL is cooking.
The XFL kicked off February 3rd, 2001, immediately following NFL Super Bowl.
God, that's like days after Super Bowl. Jesus Christ. Can you imagine, right? Champions League is, you know, on May 25th. And, you know, it's like, coming May 26th, Champions League. You know? It's like, no one would fucking watch it.
What did the XFL do differently? They put a lot of effort into the game day experience, like WWE live shows. So whilst attendance was below expectations, it only lost about 10% throughout the whole season, which is good. They got a huge radio presence, using names like Opie and Anthony, so popular nationwide disc jockeys would talk about it. The Skycam, it wasn't the first, but they popularized, you know, the overhead views.
Well, folks, he's got the most popular nickname in sports. He's Rod Smart.
Oh, Vince said you can have anything you want on the back of your jersey. And almost everyone said, no, I'm just going to use my last name, please. And Vince made them sign paper saying, I just want my last name. I don't want a gimmick name. Except for Rod Smart, a.k.a. He Hate Me. Which,
who's he?
He Hate Me. Maybe he was trying to... Garner heat and The Rock speaks in I'm not defending this.
No, don't.
The top players, the quarterbacks, made a whopping $5,000 a week, which is terrible for pro sports.
Hell yeah.
Oh, no health insurance, just like wrestlers.
Oh my god, in a sport like that, where like, isn't like the average career in NFL about 3 fucking years before your back or your neck or your knee goes?
Oh, what about the rules? Matches would be played on natural grass. No point after touchdown kicks. A 5-second shorter play clock. Bump and run was extended to anywhere, which meant that it hampered scoring, so you had low scoring matches. Instead of a coin toss, the XFL had 2 people scramble for the ball, which is a few yards away.
I like that.
Which was hilarious, as the first play in the first game saw the first winner of the first scramble get a separated shoulder.
That was out. God.
Despite blistering first game ratings, which got a whopping 15.7 million viewers on NBC, the TV audience turned out in droves, halving to 4.5 the following week and bottoming out at a 1.5 rating the next month. UPN and TNN's ratings bottomed out at a 0.6 and a 0.3. What went wrong? Wrestling fans didn't want WWF football, and football fans didn't want WWF football. The first game opened with a Rock and Vince promo saying, "We're gonna stick this right up the tail of the NFL." Trash-talking wrestling commentators JR, The King, Jesse Ventura, and Mike Adamley.
Fuck off.
XFL's MO was to attack and insult the NFL. Unfortunately, by that, they just insult the NFL's loving fans, whom they're trying to snag. A big one, the average quality of the football itself wasn't great. The best players were in the NFL. And it didn't help that the coaches who never coached together before and the players who'd never played together before had 1 month training camp to get their shit together.
God, sounds so bad.
An overall sleazy product that was tainted by being associated with fake wrestling. Strippers hired as cheerleaders danced like strippers and promoted as cheap sex objects. And obviously, they'd never deliver on that. The bigger worry was that they budgeted $100,000 for advertising spots and were now selling at less than half that just a few weeks in, so they were bleeding money every broadcast. Also, being 50-50 with NBC was unworkable since neither was in charge. And so NBC cut their losses and pulled out at the end of the season.
Get me some ratings.
Vince said it would continue into season 2, with just UPN and TNN airing it. But UPN said they'd only continue if they cut SmackDown down to 90 minutes. It was doing amazing at the time, so UPN would use the extra half hour as a lead-in to their own new 30-minute program. And Vince said, absolutely not.
You can take it and shove it. I'm not going to let anything affect my core business, which is the WWF.
Except for the XFL and WWE restaurant.
And by May 2001, it was all over. In the wake of its swift demise, there are ideas from the XFL taken aboard by the NFL, like huge TVs, high production, the Skycam, miking the refs and players and coaches.
That would have happened anyway.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
You know, yeah. Give them some. No. But the XFL is remembered as a massive financial and creative blunder that was doomed to fail, like the XFL blimp that crashed a month before launch. See, it was going to fly over an NFL game, and then they lost control. And it cost $2.5 million to repair.
Oh my goodness. The humanity.
Just as some fun trivia. The black dyed XFL football. The black dye made the ball slippy over time.
Are you fucking serious?
So they had to sand the balls down. Where is the XFL now? Gathering dust in the WWE video library. Both WWE and NBC would have distribution rights if they ever wanted to release it. And hopefully we get to see it.
Up on the network. Me as well. Yeah. Jesus, you know, like it's literally going to cost them pennies for the bandwidth or whatever, or someone to, you know, click upload and wait. Grand.
Yeah. $68 million over in 4 months. That's like your entire profit in 2000.
That's insane. That's unbelievable. Honestly, that list that you read down, like, you know, dirty hookers dancing and wrestling commentators and, you know, I'm like, that sounds great. It sounds like everything I'd want to watch if I wasn't into sport, you know? But unfortunately, it's based around sport. Yeah. Played by guys who aren't particularly great at said sport. So, yeah, it was destined to fail.
It's an incredibly niche
on paper market. Awesome sounding.
Although, they did make a tidy $10 from me buying an XFL shirt on holiday in the States.
Such a mark.
It was amazing.
How is that amazing?
Like, it was a year later, they're already closed, and I was like, oh, I totally want this XFL shirt. I used to wear it to house shows. It was great.
Oh my God, this is great!
Ooh, we get a WWF Shop Zone online ad. And a Mick Foley Ultimate Fanatic Contest. The co-host, the home video / viewer's choice pay-per-view show, Fanatic, a prize of an approximate retail value of $3,900. And then we get a promo from the RTC's Stevie Richards. It's filmed from below looking up their noses.
That's right, yeah, like the kind of huddle. Is that like in an XFL match?
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Richards promises a win by himself tonight. So we got Jerry Lawler versus Stephen Richards. On 3 days' notice, King's got a little business to take care of. So with China out injured, what are the RTC up to? Their next target is the Cat, whose gimmick is she wants to get naked on TV. Her attempts to do so were thwarted by the RTC, so she started her own Right to Nudity campaign. Backstage, we see the back of topless Stacy Carter, so, as JR puts it,
"This is what we're fighting for, the right to nudity with the Cat. She's dying to be naked here at No Way Out."
Oh my God.
It's like, how crass and lowest common denominator is this gimmick? Bird that wants to get naked. Oh, you gotta get. Of course, you're not getting naked.
Like Kelly, I'm an exhibitionist.
Mm.
To be honest, I'd be on the RTC's side with the Gansies handy. Why is King involved? In shoot, that's his wife since September 2000, but they never acknowledged that on screen. In kayfabe, he's just some colossal pervert wanting to see her tits.
That's hilarious.
Since Lawler's wrestling, JR needs a new color commentator.
Beep, 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 beep.
With tails!
Beep, 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 beep.
He's wobbling more than ever, isn't he?
Throwing shapes out, isn't he?
And he's a little puggy little fat man now, isn't he? Fucking stable. Like.
A little puggy little fat man.
He is.
I think he had put on some the prior month, yeah. But you can see he's...
Since the prior month? It's a couple of weeks. It's only water weight.
So he's trying to transition here into being a commentator already. Yeah. RTC enter to some great heat. Taz's pyro has filled the ring area with smoke. Great job, Taz. Himself and JR brush off the Taz-Lawler feud last summer. SummerSlam 2000, he's like, "JR, I'd slap you in your face, but it looks like God already beat me to it." How do you come back from that and be a babyface?
Like, yeah.
It's like Bully Ray. It's like, "Mr. Anderson, I'm going to kill your unborn child." Of his actual pregnant wife. Like, you don't become happy-go-lucky babyface after that. We see a snippet from Heat showing RTC interrupting a Nitro Girl dance by XFL's Las Vegas Outlaws cheerleaders. Steve! What bar is Jerry Lawler? Now, the King is wearing Grandma's leopard print catsuit.
They're amazing. He is not the entire rapper, but he is the font of a catch bar.
I love it. Yes, he is.
Yep.
Or he's a big lump of peanut brittle.
Glad you ended it that way. Oh, let's take it to the fans and see what bar Jerry Lawler is. He is a caramel Hershey's Kiss.
They look nice, actually. But it's Hershey, so it would be dog shit.
He is an old banana. A limited edition Roberto Cavalli Coca-Cola light can.
Oh my god, can of Coke for that man.
He is cappuccino butter toffees.
Ooh, this ain't gross.
Steve, you'll love this. He is a JMC standard issue leopard lager from Red Dwarf.
Oh, wow.
Very good.
Oh, well done.
Steve, you'll love this because it actually references a previous bar, but is a different bar entirely.
Oh my god.
He is a Reese's Dark Knight Dark Peanut Butter Bar.
Beautiful. This guy gets how what bar is played.
Batman.
He plays the strength of bars.
Batman.
Awesome.
Chester Cheetah from Cheetos. A Golden Gay Time.
Ooh.
He is a can of Heinz Spotted Dick Sponge Pudding.
Jesus Christ.
Points for relating it to Jerry Lawler. He is a roll of duct tape. And finally, a Polish bar.
Ooh.
Jerry Lawler is an alibi.
So, that's awesome.
Can of Coke, Dominic Cook.
Definitely.
Oh, did you see who the ref is?
Yeah, Teddy.
Holla, holla, holla.
Holla, holla, holla.
Yeah, Teddy Long is the referee. King starts with the male version of hair pulling, which is shitty quick punches. To see who's like...
Yeah, he always did.
Was Lawler supposed to be a good wrestler? Or is he just charismatic?
He's still wrestling in Memphis today, but like in 2001, I think he's a much better wrestler, but this is a shit booked match where he looks like an asshole. Wow, this is the biggest Stevie Richards has ever looked. Big Roid Richards here. They wrestle a choreographed spot-to-spot match in Fast Forward, i.e. this match won't last long, immediately doing an outside warning spot with the cat and a 26-punch long corner spot.
26 punches? Gets a 2.
And the crowd, after 20, just reset back to 1. But they are in time, and they don't go faster than the punches, so thank you. Oh, Lawler's not wearing a cup, so when he goes up for the 26 punches, big dick in the face.
Never realised that.
I zoomed in on
Jay's always about the groin in DC. First thing he looks at.
Him and Matt Stryker just peas in a pod. Like. Him as Matt's big bouncing dick.
Like. Although, did enjoy his own face on his jocks. I think that's a good gimmick.
Mm-hmm. Bulldog! DDT! DDT! Two missed belt shots. Dual interference until Stacy hits Jerry with the women's belt by mistake. And that secures the 3 for the RTC in 5:32. And now we find out the stipulation. The cat must join the RTC. And she gets abducted to the back using a large black sack. Awesome. So the story of this match is that Lawler continually outsmarts Steven Richards, who keeps trying to cheat by hitting him with the women's belt. And he keeps thwarting him. Until the very end. And the cat is his undoing.
Shite match. Shite moves. Shite booking. Shite.
So it was good then.
Goes full circle.
I really enjoyed the Ish Tage. That was it.
Five
down,
stars.
Yeah, that's down, it. Down the
Yeah, this was a nothing match. It was just an angle. Although, you know exactly where this storyline was going, that she'll continue to defy the RTC, be a nuisance, cost them matches, until she wins her freedom back with Lawler. However, that had never come to pass. This is the final pay-per-view for both Jerry Lawler and the Cat, as after doing Raw the next night, Lawler's wife Stacy was fired and he quit in protest. A few months earlier, you see, the Cat had a violent altercation with Lawler's son, Brian Christopher, and some of the locker room had turned against her. Also, Chyna was also given her grief as her nudie gimmick got a good response from the crowd. Also, the Cat was perceived as having a bad attitude, and No Way Out was the last straw. Not to be too spoilery, but Stacy would leave Lawler and the wrestling business in July 2001, and Shacklefree, in fantastic storyline timing, the King would return to the WWF in the fall. Today, King's still phoning it in on Raw. While Stacy married Kazerny.
No way.
In 2010.
The greatest finisher in the history of the impact of that DDT is... Woo!
It's just a roll.
He literally just rolls them up. It's desperate. Actually, maybe the worst finisher ever.
No impact.
The
roll, yeah.
Oh my God.
JR plugs China's book. I just wrote here. Fan reviews. Two people admit to reading it.
Wow. Holy shit.
Ellie Grimes says, it was one of the worst rambling pieces of shit I've ever read. It's written like she's having a conversation with you and she frequently breaks off from the story to make a lame joke or quick observation in her own words. And then Simpsons
sounds
quote,
like Air Show. That sounds awesome.
She writes like people talk.
Adam Tarkson admits to reading it, saying, it's actually a pretty depressing read. The one thing that stuck in my head, though, was when her and Triple H had a love session. After the sex, she was looking at herself in a mirror and one of her boobs started to deflate. She asked Triple H if it looks odd, to which he shrugs it off. Also, there's lots of McMahon love as it was before it all went downhill. If I find it, you boys are getting it.
God, I'd have zero interest in reading that book.
Could you imagine if she wrote it like a few years later, you know, spiraling into porn?
Oh.
It's like, oh, actually, I got these big chewy pretzels.
$5.
Get out of here. With Backstreet's back, Michael Cole, the Durster Taker, tells him it's not about the gold, but pain and suffering. The freshly manscaped dead man says the big dogs are running the yard. And oddly, Kane speaks promising tables.
I hate this version of The Undertaker.
Fuck yeah.
It's fucking bad. All his promos, he talks about his back garden and dogs. I mean,
shit.
I don't care if you're the fucking owner of your back garden. You know, like, I don't give a shite, mate.
So next up is the tag title match.
Triple threat tag team tables match. Just lol wrestling. It's just ridiculous. That is the alliteration is... That's like five T's in a row.
Wait, threat... Triple threat tag team tag type. Triple threat tag team title. Tables. Triple threat tag title tables match.
Tag team
title.
Fuck.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, no, tag
triple,
team.
Triple threat tag title table match. You don't need the team.
Tag team tag title.
But what about the alliteration, Steve?
Why are you putting on the Irish accent?
A little bit, I forgot my American.
Oh, it's the champions, the Dudley Boys, versus Edge and Christian versus Bod, the Brothers of Destruction, Kane and Taker. Aha, 6 days build for this one. Taker smashed Devon and Christian in a triple threat to get over the dominance of Taker and Kane. Sneaky heels Edge and Christian lured the Dudleys to the parking lot after telling some mark to alert Taker that the Dudleys were trashing his bike. So Taker and Kane took out the Dudleys, and Edge and Christian took out Taker and Kane with concertos. They're smart guys. Taker's wearing a trench coat and cap, trousers, and an odd Taker one-night-only V-neck vest.
Sorry for laughing. I never actually wrote down what he was wearing, and as you were saying it, I was like, picture a Taker, and then every item was like falling into my head at the fucking state of your gear.
Whilst Kane is wearing women's stocking coloured and almost deep brown coloured gear.
It's weird. Where is the red? He looks so fucking stupid. You can see his big red nipple.
Isn't Taker's entrance hilarious? So your granddad coming out fucking rolling.
Mike Ehrmantraut comes in.
And like, even the bike thing.
Oh, I'm gonna
fall. Oh, I'll walk around on my bike around the ring.
Fucking, have a little walk.
Yeah, come out on your fucking push bike.
Bring, bring. With the basket, the little streamers out of the handlebars.
Edge and Christian dressed as blinding Watt bars.
Awesome bars.
Steve, what bar are Edge and Christian?
Edge and Christian are wearing luminous green and purple jocks. So, A, they are apple and blackcurrant nerds.
Fantastic.
Skittles sour mix for Christian and berry mix for Edge. And the main event, I guarantee not one person has. They are a pair of ballista bars. Christian, awesome. Christian being the green and Edge being the purple.
Fantastic. Now, with their powers combined, let's take it to the fans.
Let's fucking do this. This is going to be awesome.
So, a Heinz Blastin' Green and Funky Purple Easy Squirt Ketchup.
Wow, holy shit. What the fuck is green ketchup? Well, I know what it is. It's green ketchup. But what is it like?
They are fizzy grape belts.
Ooh, it's quite Bruiser Bar-esque.
And Steve, this should be close to your heart. It is Cadbury's Scream Egg.
Ooh, it's like that. It's quite a Coffin Crisp-esque. Mm.
They are a can of Slurm. Wonka's Raz Apple Magic Dip Fun Dip.
Yes, they are.
Cadbury's Peppy Chewbar. Sandbag. Packets of Scampi Lemon and Ribbon Saucy Knickknacks.
What? Holy shit. Scampi and Lemon.
Well, you would put lemon on scampi though, yeah?
Yeah, I suppose so. I just wouldn't get scampi.
Hmm.
Oh, our Bra Obscura Sloopa suggests Scoop Away Unscented Super Clump. I guess it's like, I knew she'd put something with cats. And finally, Edge and Christian are a packet of Tootsie Grape Fruities.
No. Oh, there are no women here. Show me the man with the fruity booty.
There are no women here.
I'm not doing that again.
It's the best.
I don't like repetition. I don't like repetition. I don't like repetition. Like
40% of our show. A minute.
Hate repetition. Nee, nee, nee. Nee, nee, nee. Nee, nee, nee.
That was the best game of What Bar we've ever played on this. That was awesome.
Two great visuals. Dudley's coming out carrying a table. That was brilliant. And Edge and Christian are trapped on the ramp between the two other teams.
Yeah, really, really cool booking. Really smart.
The Canadians hightail it and the bell erroneously rings before anyone's in the ring. But that's okay, as you can only win via putting one opponent through a table. Meaning no one really jobs in this match. Since Lawler lost, I guess, Taz remains with JR on commentary. V1's favourite, immediate We Want Tables chance.
Yep.
Dudley's break up a double powerbomb through a table attempt and deliver smashing chair shots to the bods' heads.
There are people going, who's this Brian O'Driscoll doing in this?
That smashing chair shots, the Kane and Takers, they smashed them. Like, yeah. Ouch. Edge and Christian are booked as the smarter but cowardly weaker tag team, which is a perfect dynamic with their larger opponents. Hilarious Tree of Woe, where Edge and Christian step on Bubba's groin.
I love that spot, it was great. Of course, it's legal because it's a triple tag. Triple threat tag team title tables match.
Yeah, alright.
Awesome contrived catapult into chair shot and was it? Not a cheeky nose up the hole, but a headbutt to the outside of the thigh.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible timing, stereo top rope clotheslines from Taker and Kane.
Oh, they were awful.
Contrived sequence where Taker interrupts a winning 3D through a table to chokeslam Christian through said table, but gets low blowed instead. This is where I read, why don't you just keep punching people in the dick until they quit?
Imagine that, the heel heat of doing that to another human being.
Oh, God.
I'd be good, man.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't win this match because it's a tables match. But in general, you know, no DQ matches. The crowd chant, "We want tables," despite there being two tables in the ring. Taker and Kane try their synchronous powerbomb through a table again, but Bad Man Rikishi and Kid Tonga do a run-in, leaving Edge and Christian and the Dudleys in the ring.
Is it just me, or do Haku and Rikishi look like they should be a tag team and it works?
Honestly, it's better than Bad Man, like Bad Man.
Yeah, on his own.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So Samoa, Tonga beside each other.
Yeah.
Hmm? Oh, you know, you can just book them as being from the same town. Everything gets around, you know. They're our family.
I assume this lasted a one episode of Raw, did it, this feud? Or
it's kind of a TV, we need someone to lose, but not, you know, Triple H.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you got a few SmackDown tag matches, you know. Yeah. No pay-per-view match for you tonight, Bad Man and Kid Tonga. No Hardys either. But the Big Quiche did beat Matt Hardy by DQ on Heat. By DQ. Table of Japan, as Edge spears a table that doesn't break. Unhindered, the Dudleys 3D Christian through a table and retain their title belts in 12:04. Then the camera zooms in on an annoyed dead man.
I thought it was okay. There were lots of spots. The match was booked decently well, but this match would have been much better if it was swapped with Jerry Lawler or with the opening match. Yeah, it was fine. Ending wasn't great, especially considering that Kid Tonga and the Quiche didn't go on to wrestle fucking Kane and Taker.
We're on SmackDown.
It was fine.
Yeah, this is the third tornado tag style match. Like, the hardcore is just a big pylon. IC title match was a four-way pylon. Yeah. And then this is a big pylon where everyone's doing something. No one's tagged out. But I actually really enjoyed it. I like all of these teams. Even Kid Tonga, so. He's fun to see. So, yeah.
I thought it was a fun match. Not a patch on the Rumble match, which was thought was really good. The only thing is, it was slowed down by Kane and Taker. If only you could replace them with the Hardys. And add maybe ladders and chairs in there. Oh, we could have some match in our hands now.
That could be an excellent match if booked correctly.
Jeez, hopefully it happens sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What do you call that? Like,
that's like mum's the word.
Oh, mum's the word. Oh, so it must be time for your main event. It's time for your main event. The following contest scheduled for one fall is for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. It's the challenger, The Rock, versus WWF champion Kurt Angle. Whilst not on Chris Jericho's undisputed champion levels of being overlooked, Kurt Angle is being portrayed on TV and regarded by his opponents very similarly as a fluke champion that will lose any day now. Rock says his days of being champion and being happy are at an end. And in a really cool line, I thought, says, "Do you understand The Rock? Do you understand me?" You know, he never says that,
yeah.
Transitional champion Kurt Angle comes out first like the afterthought he is.
It should never happen. It should never, ever happen.
Also, even though Austin and Triple H were the proper main event of this, I like how the world title's going on last.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, you could have mentioned Angle beat Rock for his first WWF title at No Mercy, even if Rikishi interfered, so,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Rock enters the ring. He looks weird without the title.
His body is completely different to the Rock that we've got in this day and age. Like, he must be banging the roids out of it. Like, oh my Christ, he's so smart.
Why do you think he tore his pec and then tore his abs? Or is he tore his thigh? Like, within the first minute of both WrestleMania matches. Yeah.
Big Batista terror, like.
That's what happens when you're roidy and 40. Like,
yeah. You know. Although he looks awesome.
He does he look awesome. He looks amazing. Yeah. Despite my annoyances, Angle's over as a heel in Vegas, getting multiple Angle Sucks chants. Oh, something awesome from Taz! Taz big ups Angle as the best in the world, the WWF champion who can't be out-wrestled, and asks why everyone thinks Rock's going to win this match with his eyes closed.
That's awesome. He's calling out the bullshit. He's putting over Angle. He's sowing that seed of doubt to the people who know The Rock is winning, because, you know, it's Austin Rock, obviously. Well done, Taz. He used to be quite excellent at this before he went to TNA and stopped caring.
Kick off hot with an ankle lock and Rock's shit shooter.
Shark shooter.
Then compare belly to belly suplexes. Angle's.
Oh, there is no comparison, Jay.
Angle's perfect form versus The Rock's kinda shitty hip toss bollocks.
Yeah. It's Angle did all the work on both of those moves.
But
despite Roman being The Rock's.
Rock knows he can't do it overhead. So
which is fine.
Yeah. So let's be safe about this.
Yeah.
He's quite theatrical in how he does his moves. Yeah, that's The Rock's thing.
This is more to kind of point out how exceptional Kurt is to, you know, take anything away from The Rock, because he's maybe the greatest ever at certain things, like, you know.
The lads take a rest as there's huge heat. Oh, it's a fan being ejected on the hard camera. DDT and the lads take another breather and get a sneaky look. Where? Oh, for fuck's sake.
New Year's baby, out again. Fucking interfering. Who gets their music played when they inter... Who sanctioned that?
It's so fake, isn't
it? It's like, here, play my music. No. We're gonna play
my music. But like, makes no sense. He's not involved. He just won the... He's feuding with the one Billy Gunn. You know?
He's Crash Holly.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's like, neither man here is going to wrestle you at Mania. Stay away. Like,
stay away.
Yeah. Fuck off. Neither man wants to wrestle you at WrestleMania.
Yeah, fuck off. Could have just left it at that. It's beautiful.
It's a bit like 2015, actually.
Pretty much.
Well, we're already in the home stretch of the match. That was fast.
Mm.
Show does his three arm squeezes. If you remember, he does this. And do you know what that is?
For his missus.
Yeah.
Very good. It means I love you to his missus. I think that's lovely.
Yeah, it's nice.
His singlet is pulled down to his waist, which looks like a nappy.
Foreshadowing.
So much foreshadowing. It's like the Shoguns, the New Year's baby.
The Shoguns?
It's coming.
Big Show chokeslams referee Mike Chioda, then Kurt Angle, and then Rocky. And then his theme plays again for some reason. Rock heelishly uses the title belt on Angle, but new referee Earl Hebner only counts two, which gets boos.
Hold on. Earl Hebner had one of my favourite spots on the entire show. He was carrying the first ref who got knocked out back. And he turns around and he sees it and he just drops him and runs into the ring to count him. Brilliant.
Ankle lock. Potty mouth Kurt shouts, "Tap out, you son of a bitch, I'll break your fucking ankle."
It's awesome. You could see him slowly but surely turning from the geeky, you know, into the wrestling machine. Also, I thought The Rock sold getting to the ropes really badly. He was so close and he did this, you know, like, but it's like, just put out your arm. Don't bend your arm. Cramping up. Bend your elbow. He's got tetanus.
Kurt starts doing the just bring it hand gesture and gets caught with a spine buster and then a people's elbow. Got a massive pop. Angle kicks out, huge boos and bullshit chants. The ref misses a low blow and Angle takes off a top turnbuckle pad to reveal the steel ring buckle underneath. Smashes Rock's head into it and hits an Olympic slam, but only gets a two.
Two.
Because usually, man, hit someone with a foreign object.
And then your move.
Finisher? Mm. Come on.
You don't see the spot anymore in wrestling. No one takes off the pads anymore.
Yeah, true.
That's kind of sad. Rock throws Angle into the exposed buckle, then hits a rock bottom. Angle doesn't kick out, but Earl doesn't count three.
I reckon Kurt Angle just thought, this the finish, I'm not going to kick out, and
okay.
Hebner knew that he was to kick out.
All right, yeah.
But yeah,
but this was the finish, because they just had to redo the finish.
It's the very same thing. It really is.
Huge heat, and The Rock is fucking furious. You can see him just Earl.
And rightfully so.
Just get up, rock bottom, evil eyes to Earl, and gets the win and the WWF Championship in 1653. And then as soon as possible, JR starts plugging X7, Rock Austin, get the fuck out Angle. who shows Hogan how to cry while leaving and not steal heat.
Yeah.
As The Rock celebrates the CSA.
Some lady in the crowd had a sign with Viva Rock Vegas on it, which is the sequel to the Flintstones movie. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Mum's the word, Steve.
It all comes full circle. Oh my God.
So what do you think?
I quite enjoyed it. This was a fast-paced match. Oh my God. Angle was just built up ahead of steam, Jay. Really quick, loads of good moves. Angle was awesome. He fucking bumped like a boss. He made The Rock look great. The only thing I didn't like about it, I thought they kicked out of too much, especially going into Mania where that's your plan. But apart from that, I thought this was excellent.
Yeah, great match. Yeah, I thought it was better than Angle Triple H because it didn't have the bullshit with the cat fight. It did have the bullshit with Big Show, but that was less bullshitty. Exciting climax. There is a suspension of disbelief. Who's going to win this? Angle drove the pace. Not that The Rock can't have a great match, but Angle really elevated him. So, delighted with this one.
I actually really enjoyed it as well. It was weird that, much like the Three Stages of Hell, it seemed like you just cut out the first half of the match and had a long second half of the match. That was really enjoyable. I hated seeing Big Show. Oh my God. It's very sad that Kurt Angle is treated this way. I know he's nowhere on the level of Austin Rock, but, you know, you can do better. But, yeah, really enjoyed it. Just like all of this paper, you say the women's match. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's great. Yeah. Watch it.
Definitely.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us from Las Vegas. Good night, everybody.
So, what do you think of the pay-per-view overall?
I would absolutely recommend the show. The Fatal 4-Way Intercontinental title match was excellent. Particularly Benoit and Eddie, phenomenal. Stephanie versus Trish was better than it had any right to be. Trish's arse was great. The tonguey bum, the starving bum. Triple H versus Austin, in my opinion, stole the show. It was fucking great. This is a great way to show how to tell a story in wrestling, which is sadly missing in most matches nowadays. And it was weird, but also great to see blood, double blood. Main event was excellent. In particular, Kurt Angle is just fucking awesome. So quick, so smooth, so brilliant. Just everything he does is awesome. Things I didn't enjoy. I thought the hardcore match was a bit shit. The 24/7 rule, just in general, I thought was a bit bollocks. Lawler versus Right to Censor. Terrible match, terrible payoff. The whole cat angle, who cares if she gets her tits out? We all know she's not going to ever again. And Taker and Kane in this tag match, wasn't a big fan. I thought they dragged the match down and they generally just no-sell everything. And my biggest two gripes about this show, one, kicking out of everything. I think it's silly heading into your biggest show ever. The biggest thing was, as good as this show is, it feels like it has no bearing in the build to Mania. It feels like it's just a separate show. There's no real build-up towards Austin Rock in here, other than both guys having their own separate matches. They're clearly heading towards Taker and Kane versus Kid Tonga and Kishi, and that doesn't happen. So what the hell is going on there? Angle and Benoit has had no build, and that happens. I'm sure there's more, but just in general, I don't feel like this is part of the build up to Mania. It just feels like a show.
So the best booked feud is Ivory and China.
Don't treat me like a woman.
But overall?
Overall, it's a great show. The matches are excellent. There are two whopper matches on the show. So definitely go out of your way to watch them.
Thought it was a very good show. The garbage hardcore match I thought was okay. The women's match was surprisingly good. And the three major title matches were all very good, and especially the main event. Overall, yeah, not as good as the Rumble, but it's still very, very well worthy of a watch.
I agree. It's an excellent and easy watch. So much easier to digest the McMahon storyline bollocks and Trish and Stefan. Bitch, bitch, bitch. When it's a super hot crowd. So much talent makes the pay-per-view go by very quickly. Great IC tag world title matches. Hardcore was enjoyable enough, and H and Austin have a blinder. So it's a nice show. Great work, WWF. I would have liked to have seen the light heavyweight champion, Dean Malenko, you know, and my boy Test, he's European champion. He should have been on the show. The Hardys weren't on the show either.
Oh my god, imagine the Fatal 4-Way if you took out X-Pac and put in Dean. Oh my god, it would have been so good.
But sure, you can't have it all. Or maybe you can. Next time on pay-per-view for WrestleMania X7. But there would be a major shake-up before WrestleMania, because next up we're doing Final Nitro, the last ever edition of WCW Nitro. So before we sign out for the evening, let's hit the wrestling is...
Rrrr!
Shit! Wow, WCW. Segment.
Awesome! He's a beauty, huh? Now listen to this. A one-time only opportunity. If you buy the helmet right now, I'll throw in the entire XFL. That's right. You buy the helmet and you can have the whole damn league. The no fair catch rule, it's yours. The fumble coin toss, take it. With the cameras in the cheerleaders' dressing rooms, even the cheerleaders, all yours. Hey, you remember the Memphis Maniacs? Of course you don't. That's why you can have all the teams, too. Wouldn't that be nice for someone, say, out here in Los Angeles, where there are no football teams? Now, you'll have 8. And if you order in the next minute, I'll throw in former XFL announcer Jesse the Body Ventura. You can have him. He's not doing much these days anyway. So call now. I promise you, they don't make them like they used to anymore. Our operators are standing by. People, this is a very good deal. Originally worth $35 million, now only $29. And I'll throw in that running back, he hate me. Remember him? Of course you don't. That's why all this can be yours. Call now. There's only one XFL. You can be sure of that. The phone lines are open. Okay. You get the XFL helmet. You get the entire XFL. You get Jesse Ventura. You get He Hit Me. And if you call now, I'll throw in this WrestleMania t-shirt. Finally. That's pathetic.
So that does it for this week, folks. Episode 49 is in the books.
In the pocket.
Go to sight.
Next up, we have the last ever WCW show. It's Final Nitro, that aired March 26th, the same night as simulcast Raw. So stay tuned for that. And remember, you can watch all of our videos,
fuck,
FOC, free of charge, and in IMAX 4:3 full screen at oswreview.com. So it's goodbye from Ozzy.
All right.
V1.
And me, Allison.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember...
Awesome.
Steve, that album is coming.
It's coming to be amazing.